Welcome to the Natural Allergy Treatment Podcast. I'm your host, Jess, based here in Sydney, and joining me today from Auckland, New Zealand, is our PAT expert naturopath, Jenny. Hi, Jenny.
Hello.
We're part of Health and Wellness Australia in Auckland, who are a team of naturopaths around Australia and New Zealand who perform a natural allergy treatment called Positive Association Technique, or PAT. So it's the last day of winter here in Australia and New Zealand, and we've been seeing quite a few clients in our clinics experiencing hay fever symptoms already, which is very unusually early. So today we're going to be talking all about spring hay fever triggers, as there's actually more to spring than just pollen. We'll also talk about why more people are experiencing hay fever than ever before, how the hay fever season is changing, and how our natural allergy treatment may be able to help. So to start us off, Jenny, would you mind giving us a rundown of what hay fever actually is?
Sure. So firstly, hay fever actually has nothing to do with hay, and it hardly ever has a symptom of fever. So the term hay fever refers to the haying season, which happens in the spring months when farmers harvest and bale the hay. So this can cause high amounts of allergenic triggers to go into the air, which causes a reaction for some people. So the hay fever doesn't cause the fever, but it can make your face look really red from the irritation of your symptoms. So you look like you've got a fever, even though your body's in normal range. And so the typical symptoms of hay fever include sneezing, runny nose, itchy, watery, red eyes, as well as headaches, fatigue, and a blocked nose. So hay fever is also called allergic rhinitis, and there's two types. So seasonal allergic rhinitis is when in the time of the year when the pollens pollinate, and it's caused by the wind blowing all the pollens around. So the most problematic pollen is produced from trees, grasses, and weeds. And these are generally lightweight and spread easily by the wind. So they can be transported to really long distances and cause reactions to people living really, really far away. So it's really can be quite a problem for people. So the pollens from shelby flowers, they're generally really heavy and sticky, and they require a pollinator like bees to carry the pollen from one flower to another. So they're not they're less likely to cause seasonal allergies. And the reason that some people react, when they react, depends on what the person is allergic to. So in springtime, many people react to the flowering trees, and then in summertime, it's more the grass and the weed pollens. And then the other type of hay fever is called perennial allergic rhinitis, and it's all year round, and it's caused more by indoor allergens like dust mites and animal dander from pets. So dander is the skin flakes that the cats and the dogs shed along with their fur.
Yeah. So it's also worth noting that many people also experience both types of hay fever. So they can experience mild to moderate symptoms year round and then have a big flare up during spring. So, but when it comes to seasonal hay fever, which is caused by these springtime triggers, currently it's affecting around 1 in 5 Australian and New Zealanders. But why do only some people experience it?
Yeah, so the hay fever occurs when the immune system overreacts. So when you encounter an allergen, your immune system treats it like an intruder, and it releases chemicals like histamines and leukotrienes and prostaglandins, which inflame the lining of your nasal passages, your sinus, and your eyelids, which can cause those symptoms of the runny nose and the itchy, watery eyes, itchy mouth, itchy throat, ears, postnasal drip, pain or pressure around your sinuses, and sneezing and coughing. So it's quite a big immune response that it causes. And all these symptoms are sent by the immune system to protect your body, either by trapping or expelling the allergen. So it's by swelling those areas like the nasal passages so that the allergen can't enter. So the immune system thinks it's doing a good thing. It's just not an appropriate thing. So if you have allergic rhinitis, these symptoms can be all year round. So that swelling in your nasal membranes can close the sinus drainage openings, which can cause sinusitis. Nosebleeds can occur. And if you have asthma, it can make it worse, and you can have trouble breathing. But the most frustrating thing for people generally is the fatigue, because it's so debilitating. It can feel like you have a cold or a flu. So for those of you that don't react, spare a thought to your friends and family, as it really does affect their quality of life. It can change their mood, affect their sleep, and make it harder to focus on the symptoms as it can happen weekly during the spring or summer season. So, you know, it's a really full-on experience for a lot of people. And the hard thing for hay fever sufferers is that these substances are harmless and don't affect other people. So most people have no immune response to pollen. But for some reason, the ones that do, their immune systems perceive it as foreign and dangerous and then treat it as if it was a pathogen, so therefore creating all these symptoms.
Well, that's actually the main premise of how positive association technique works. So basically, it aims to reduce the reaction to a substance which is actually harmless, but for some reason, our body is reacting to it in error. So are there certain factors that can make someone more susceptible to experiencing hay fever?
Yeah, definitely. So hay fever is often an inherited trait. So scientists have conducted studies on twins, and they found that the inheritability of hay fever ranges between 33 to 91%. So that means that people who have parents or siblings with hay fever have a much higher chance of getting it themselves. Scientists also found that asthma and eczema are also inherited issues. So during these studies, they found that 41 genes can lead to hay fever. And so now you can do DNA tests that identify whether or not your genes can cause you or your children to develop hay fever, which if you suffer, it could be, you know, a good thing. So allergic diseases, not just hay fever, have become much more common over the last few decades, as there are a couple of theories being researched to explain why this is happening. So one of them is the hygiene hypothesis, and the other one is low vitamin D levels. So the hygiene hypothesis is the idea that the more developed countries were too clean, and so our children haven't been exposed to the microorganisms that protects them against allergies and therefore strengthens their immune system. So exposure to these parasites and bacteria is what trained our immune system to be so effective in the beginning. So it's evolved over millions of years, and it's used to being under constant threat. And so now it has less to do. It can overreact and become aggravated by harmless substances like pollen or dust mites, and it interprets them as the bacterial invasions and tries to expel them and then sends, you know, all these symptoms. The other factor that I think is actually really important and quite interesting is low vitamin D levels may also be contributing to the rise of allergies. And scientific evidence has shown that food allergies and anaphylaxis occur at much higher rates where there is much less sun exposure. So asthma, eczema, and atopy, which is an exaggerated IgE-mediated immune response, has been associated with low vitamin D levels. So studies suggest that vitamin D deficiency is actually really, really common, even in Australia where there's lots of sun. Because, you know, during COVID, a lot of people didn't go outside. And also there's been a lot more rain. So it's kept people indoors. And because vitamin D is made in the skin and you need sunlight exposure for it, if you do go out and then you cover up or you use sunscreen, it prevents this vitamin D synthesis. So there's this ongoing deficiency that's happening for people because they're A, not going out as much, and then when they do, they're covering up. And so like here in New Zealand, we didn't really get a summer, like it rained so much. And so most people here have really low vitamin D, and you can actually see it in people's personalities as SAD, or seasonal affective disorder, is caused by low vitamin D. And that's a type of depression that causes low mood, kind of a lack of interest in life. So people generally here at the moment are very meh, you know, they just not really motivated. Everyone's just over the rain. And so we just all need some sunshine.
Yeah, for sure.
And so the reason why vitamin D is important for people with allergies is it can activate certain regulatory immune system cells that prevent the release of the chemicals that cause and worsen the allergies. So deficiency may inhibit this mechanism, so it worsens or triggers an allergic defense.
Yeah, so there's definitely a few factors at play here, but we've definitely noticed in the last few years, clients have been telling us that they're experiencing hay fever for the first time ever. So do you think that the recent weather patterns have contributed to this as well?
Yes, this is really, really interesting and a bit of a wake-up call, I think, because according to the World Health Organization, WHO, climate change is lengthening pollen allergy seasons and increasing the intensity of the allergens. So changes in temperature, the weather, and CO2 rates have increased the severity and the amount of people who have allergies worldwide. So what they've discovered, that the scientists have done all of this research, and they've found that the carbon dioxide that's being emitted itself encourages pollen production. So pollens, you know, we've seen it before, like pollens thrive in a warm greenhouse, which releases lots of carbon dioxide. And so in this kind of an atmosphere or space, it can produce more pollen, like some of these plants produce more pollen than they likely would. But this is now happening on a worldwide scale because we have so much more CO2 in the air. It's literally the whole world is becoming a greenhouse. Yeah. So, and you can kind of see this through from the past, because Australia went through a millennial drought between 2000 and 2010, and it caused the grass levels to be low. So less people were actually suffering as severe symptoms as they previously had. But from 2012, Australia began to get more rain, and it's dramatically increased grass pollens in the atmosphere, which unfortunately is the major allergen responsible for hay fever in Australia and also New Zealand. So the types of weather that we're having. So the La Nina weather that we've had in the last 3 years has also contributed to the problem, because it brings more rain and warmth and humidity, which creates optimal growing conditions for the pollen producing all of these grass and weeds and trees. Like last year, poor Canberra recorded its worst hay fever on record, which is not great for them because they already have the highest rates of hay fever in Australia. Like 1 in 3 are likely to be affected compared to 1 in 5. And
wow.
Yeah. And part of the problem with that is because Canberra has this mix of native and introduced plant species, but because of the different types, they're actually exposed almost all year round to pollens. So the tree pollen starts sort of mid-July to October, and then it kicks in with the grass pollen season, which is October to December. And then late winter is dominated mainly from pollen from the cypress and the pine and the ash trees. But it's also not just the CO2 that can cause allergies to rise. I don't know if you remember, but in 2016, Melbourne had the most fatal epidemic thunderstorm asthma in the world. So these thunderstorms are triggered by a combination of high grass pollen levels and a certain type of thunderstorm. So what happens is the grass pollen grains get caught up in the wind and they travel for long distances. But because of this, it can cause the grains to burst open, of the pollen grains to burst open and release tiny particles that become concentrated in the wind. And so the gusts kind of pick them up, and just before a thunderstorm, and these particles are so small that when they get breathed deep into the lungs, it can quickly cause asthma symptoms and it makes it hard to breathe. So during this particular thunderstorm, thousands of people were being rushed to hospital with respiratory related symptoms and hundreds of excess asthma related hospital admissions. But also there was 35 intensive care admissions and 10 deaths. Like, it was crazy. So there is a potential that this could happen again and more frequently, just because there is going to be so much more pollen in the air.
Yeah. And I remember a lot of those people weren't existing asthma sufferers. So this was the first time they'd ever experienced anything like it as well.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm. Yeah. And so what happens is it's all about tolerance. So there's people that didn't know that they had allergies, but what's happened is they've got to a threshold. So you have to get to a certain point before your body will start sending you symptoms. And so these people might have just had really super low grade symptoms. But now that there's more pollen in the air, their body is now reacting to it because it's got to that threshold point. So especially adults, they are getting hay fever, or the ones that have got hay fever, they're actually getting a worsening of the symptoms and the length of time that they react. But there's also another thing that climate change has created, is it's called the priming effect. And so like a mild winter can trigger an early release of pollen. And once allergy sufferers are exposed to this, their immune system is actually primed to react to the allergens, meaning that even if there's just a small amount of pollen in the air, their body's going to launch this huge, big immune response and cause the hay fever symptoms. So it makes for a longer hay fever season for them and stronger symptoms.
Yeah. And we've also seen a lot of clients who report only to start experiencing symptoms when they've moved here from overseas. Is that a thing?
Yeah. So where you grew up can have a big impact on your susceptibility to hay fever because it depends on what you're exposed to. So when you move countries, like if you grew up in a dry inland environment, you may not have been exposed to much grass pollen. And so moving to Australia and New Zealand, where grass is everywhere, is one of the leading causes of hay fever, and it can make your immune system susceptible, and then you might start reacting. It's the same thing for people who have moved from a tropical to a non-tropical country because they've encountered seasons for the first time. And so with it, there'll be new species of pollen that their immune systems have just not experienced. But because of climate change, you don't even have to move anymore because as the planet warms up, opportunistic plants are managing to thrive in areas that they normally wouldn't be able to. And so it's exposing people to new pollens even in their own backyards. An international example of this is in Tokyo. So the pollen count has surged to the highest in a decade, and about 40% of Japanese are said to experience hay fever symptoms. It's because the country has this huge population of cedar and cypress trees, and they begin shedding their pollen at the start of the year. So it's been blamed on post-war reforestation, like this post-war reforestation program that they did, because during that time they planted trees to help the country like with their construction. But then the price of imported building materials dropped in the 70s and the 80s. The Japanese forests kind of were just left to grow in density. And so what that happened is there's just masses of these trees that release their pollens all at the same time. And so interestingly, they did this study in 2020 from Japanese hay fever sufferers, and about 80% said that their symptoms made them less productive. They've even talking about having actual hay fever, like is that being part of the sickness, like a day off kind of thing, because people get so sick from them. It's also why you still will see a lot of Japanese people wearing masks outside, despite the fact that the government guidelines have said you don't have to wear face coverings, you know, to prevent COVID. They're actually wearing it to block all the pollen getting into their nostrils.
Wow, that sounds really intense, but it's really interesting example as well to see what's happening there. Now, all right, we know that pollen is the biggest trigger for seasonal hay fever, but there's actually a couple of other plant metabolites that can also contribute to symptoms that aren't as well known. So these are also commonly part of a PAT treatment plan for seasonal hay fever. So would you mind telling us a bit more about them?
Yeah, sure. So they're called plant phenolics and terpenes. So plant phenolics are naturally occurring chemicals in plants, and they're responsible for the taste and the color and smell of them. And they play a major role in defending the plant against pests and pathogens. So, you know, when you mow or you cut your grass or you prune trees, they will release these chemicals in defense. And this can trigger hay fever or asthma or skin conditions. So, you know, if you've been cutting the roses, some people will come in and they've got like welts almost on their hands. That's also why some people, if they sit on cut grass, they get really, really itchy. But when they sit on normal grass, they don't react. So they're actually reacting to those plant phenolics. They're also the way that the plants communicate and defend against other plants. So they can release specific biomolecules that create like a barren space around them so that no one can thrive. So I don't know if you've ever been walking in the bush and you see like a plant and it's almost like there's a circle of just dirt around them. Like they've created these chemicals so that the other species can't grow there. So this is termed allopathy. And they are really potent chemicals that people react to as well. So climate change, again, is playing a role in this because there is an increase in these interactions with plants because they're all growing and they're all trying to fight for their position. So there's more of a phenolic release in the environment. So this is causing more phenolic-related allergies. And then the other one is terpenes. And see, these are the aromatic compounds. So they're the smell of the plants and the herbs. So, you know, that beautiful smell of rosemary or lavender and pine, and that's the terpenes. And so they play a vital role in the plants attracting pollinators or repelling insects and animals. So they also play a protective role in the plants to recover from damage. So it's a really, again, a really potent, strong plant chemical. And they were first identified in the 19th century, and they got their name from turpentine, which is a product that they made from pine tree resin, which is rich in the terpene known as pinene. So terpene sensitivity or allergy results when the terpenes are inhaled or applied to the skin. So when this happens, antibodies are produced and it creates a production of the chemicals that will cause the allergic reactions like sneezing and runny nose, watery eyes, inflammation and coughing. And interestingly, the terpenes themselves are not allergenic. It's only when they are oxidized or, you know, when they're exposed to air that they will actually cause problems. So they found that oxidized terpenes can trigger asthma and rhinitis in certain people, especially from the pinene, from the pine trees. That's been known to cause respiratory symptoms and nasal congestion. And, you know, this is why some people, when they walk into a house with like a freshly cut pine Christmas tree, they'll start sneezing or react, or those that live near a pine plantation can really suffer with asthma. So they can also cause contact dermatitis because the manufacturers use these isolated terpenes to create flavors and scents and perfumes and body products and even foods. So the reactions have actually dated back way to the beginning of the 20th century, where painters were recorded getting occupational contact dermatitis from the use of this turpentine as a solvent to dissolve their paints and their varnishes. So as long as we've used it, we've kind of had problems with it. And then also just really something that I find quite interesting is the task of mowing a lawn can also, it's not just, say, these plant phenolics that are releasing from the cut grass, but it also, when you mow the lawn, it releases microscopic fungal spores or like molds that's on the grasses because of the mold that's living in the soil. So when you mow or when they do crop harvesting in rural areas, it can increase the levels of the specific type of species called Alternaria into the air. And so this is a problem if it's been sort of particularly dry and windy followed by a period of rain. So it's like, it's just when you mow it, it's puts it out into the air and then people inhale it. So you're kind of getting a double whammy of the plant phenolics and the mold. And so this isn't really great news here in New Zealand because we have had a lot of rain and we have a lot of grass. And so when all the mowing starts happening, once the soil's all dried out, there'll be a lot of this mold sort of circulating in the air.
Yeah, for sure. And I guess like we classically think of mold being in indoor areas, like bathrooms, kitchens, and we've had a lot of indoor issues with all this rain. So it's really interesting to find out that it's actually in these outdoor areas too. So it's definitely going to contribute to the problem, I think.
Yeah.
So when it comes to treatment options for hay fever, most people usually turn to antihistamines first, but I've had a lot of feedback that they can actually stop working over time. So are there some reasons behind this?
Yeah. So what antihistamines do is they block the body from releasing the histamine, which then reduces the symptoms of the allergies. But unfortunately, these medications, if you take them over a long time, they can stop being as effective because the body has developed a tolerance to it. So this can happen when the body's cells are less responsive to a drug the longer it's exposed to it. Or like, for example, like when your taste receptors on your tongue, if they can adapt to extra spicy foods when you eat them a lot. So then, you know, your tolerance to the spice gets better. And so this is called a dynamic tolerance. The other way the body responds to the ongoing presence of a drug is that it can start to break it down and excrete it more quickly than it used to. So then it lowers the drug concentration. So therefore you don't get as good of a result from it. And that's called kinetic tolerance. But they can also stop working antihistamines when you develop new allergies or your allergies have gotten worse. So people with multiple allergy triggers, the immune response might get worse and strengthen over time. So it makes your allergy symptoms worse. So the worse your allergies are, the less effective the antihistamines become. And then also, on top of all of that, like when your stress levels increase, antihistamines may have a weakened effect and provide less relief than if in less stressed people. So this can cause, so long-term stress disrupts your immune system and worsens allergies by increasing your sensitivity to them, because mental or emotional stress can cause mast cell deregulation. So this releases inflammatory mediators that cause airway constriction, increased mucus production, coughing, sneezing, hives, you know, all of the things that are associated with hay fever and allergens. So there's a lot of things going on why possibly, you know, for those of you that have been taking antihistamines, this is why they're not working as well.
Yeah, and I totally understand the frustration that people with hay fever must feel, because it's just getting more and more intense over the past few years especially, and we've just spoken to so many clients who their antihistamines have stopped working. But I guess that's often what brings them to us, because they're looking for a natural longer-term treatment option. So basically what positive association technique or PAT can provide is a symptomatic relief from these seasonal triggers, reactions to these seasonal triggers like pollens, phenolics, terpenes, as well as the specific grass and tree species which may be contributing to people's symptoms. So this can be a total game changer for people with hay fever and have been relying on antihistamines. So all our practitioners are qualified naturopaths who use a form of muscle testing to see which airborne triggers you may be reacting to. Then we use a chiropractic tool to gently stimulate acupressure points down either side of the spine, which aims to retrain your body to no longer react to the substance. So like we said earlier, it's really just reacting to a substance which is actually harmful, but our body's reacting to it in error. So if this is something you'd like to learn more about, you can go to our website, naturalallergytreatment.com.au. It has more information about what's involved in PAT, our contact details, and we also have an online booking system. So thanks for chatting with me today, Jenny. It's been a pleasure as always.
Thank you. Yeah, it was great to have a chat.
No worries. Speak to you soon.
Thanks.